It's finally here, the day the nation picks its president. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, as voters go to the polls, a look at Florida's importance on this historic election day. Give us a call now. It's 549-2937 to join us. Then later, are you suffering from election stress like millions of other people? Our contributor Dan Nevins has some calming techniques for you. But first this hour, the latest on the coronavirus pandemic. The State Department of Health reported 4,651 new cases Monday and 46 new deaths, including two new deaths in Duval County. The total death toll from COVID in this state now stands at 17,043. We also need to let you know that two local COVID testing sites will close just today for Election Day. They will suspend testing at the Mandarin and Leroy Clemens Senior Centers. They're at 3848 Hartley Road and 55 North Jackson Ave. Be mindful of that. Those sites will reopen and resume normal operations starting tomorrow. But meantime, it is Election Day. And polls are open across the region on this historic day in America. You have until 7 o'clock tonight to cast your ballot. Keep in mind, nearly 100 million Americans have already voted, and turnout after this evening is expected to shatter all records in the modern era. Now, as we've noted, the coronavirus remains a concern, so make sure to wear your mask when you head to your polling place. And here's a tip. If you are online, even right before 7 o'clock, you are eligible to vote. Stay in line if you get there at the end of the voting window. This morning, we're going to welcome a local resident who is uniquely suited to comment on this momentous day. Jason Altmaier is a former congressman from the Pittsburgh area. He served three terms there. He's now a healthcare executive who lives in Ponte Vedra. Altmaier is also the author of the 2017 book, Dead Center. It explored the causes of political polarization in America. In office, Jason was rated by the nonpartisan National Journal to have the most centrist voting record in the U.S. House of Representatives. He joins us now with some thoughts on just how important Florida will be tonight and also his home state of Pennsylvania. Jason Altmaier, always good to talk to you. Thanks for being with us on this election day.
Good morning, Melissa. It's a big day. Glad to be with you.
It is a big day. And as we speak with former Congressman and Dead Center author Jason Altmaier, we want your calls, everybody. Call us up on this election day. Let us know if you've already voted, if you plan to vote today, and what your thoughts are about the election. 549-2937. Give us a call. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. And our Facebook page is open. Well, Jason, it's such a pleasure to have you on today. I can't think of a more interesting person to chat with on this November 3rd, because you do live here now in Northeast Florida after serving several terms in Congress from a Pittsburgh area district. So you're closely watching both states tonight. You know a lot about both states. Let's begin, though, with our home state of Florida and its 29 electoral votes, which, of course, both President Trump and Joe Biden are fighting hard to get. Based on what we know about the polling and the lay of the land, how do you think Florida is going to go tonight?
It's interesting because, you know, a key difference between Pennsylvania and Florida is in Pennsylvania, you have a lot of Democrats that are conservative leaning and tend to vote Republican. And the challenge for Democratic candidates is getting them to swing back and vote Democrat. In Florida, it's really all about turnout. The Republicans generally support Republicans and the Democrats generally support Democrats. And right now it looks dead even. It looks like Democrats had a little bit of an edge, about 100,000 votes statewide in the early voting, but that is usually the case as the Republicans are more likely to vote in person. So I think Florida is going to go right down to the wire. It's clear that the president had a lot of momentum in Florida coming into the election. The question is going to be, did he have enough to catch the lead that Vice President Biden had?
Based on a review of the Electoral College and the various paths both of these men have to get to 270 electoral votes, former Vice President Biden has many paths to 270. President Trump has far fewer, and they really do include winning Florida. In other words, Jason, Biden can afford to lose Florida much more easily than Trump, correct?
That is definitely the case. Of course, you need 270 electoral votes to win. And if you look at the forecasters yesterday, and you know they had differences of opinion, but Vice President Biden can get well over 300 electoral votes, get up into the 320s without Florida. That's certainly not the case for President Trump. President Trump is going to lose a number of states that he won in 2016. They're going to flip towards the Democrats, and he really has to have Florida. So if the election tonight, you're going to see a lot of states that don't start counting ballots until the polls close. You're not going to hear from them for the next couple of days. Florida doesn't do that. Florida counts in advance, and you're going to hear a projection on Florida, assuming it's not a razor-thin margin. You could hear a projection tonight. And if that goes to Vice President Biden, that pretty much seals the election, I think, for the Democrats.
We'll watch for that. But as you said, Jason, we might not know early in the evening if Florida is on a razor's edge. That leads me to my next question for you. As a former congressman from Pittsburgh and as the guy who was rated the most centrist congressman in the House, Pennsylvania, let's talk about Pennsylvania. This state could be the hinge state tonight. Both candidates have focused so heavily on it. There are a lot of factors going on in Pennsylvania, including the way they're going to be counting their mail-in ballots. How do you see Pennsylvania factoring in tonight?
Both of the candidates treated Pennsylvania in the past week like they were running for governor of the state. They were in all four corners, and all of the four principals, the candidates and their spouses, were in every part of the state. Western Pennsylvania is really up for grabs. That's the area I represented, and that's the area where you have those Democrats that will vote Republican if they don't like their option on the Democratic side. And it is going to be a challenge because Pennsylvania is one of those states they do not start counting the mail-in votes. And of course, this year, for a number of reasons, we had a record number of mail-in votes. They don't start counting them until the polls close. So you won't know who won Pennsylvania until maybe tomorrow, maybe even later in the week. And if that is determinative, which it's possible it could be, we're just going to have to wait and see who the president is.
Right. And, you know, that so-called Rust Belt blue wall for Democrats that Hillary Clinton lost in 2016, Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Ohio, former Vice President Biden is predicted to pick up Wisconsin and Michigan, bring those back into the blue column tonight. He is up by about 5 points in Pennsylvania. That said, President Trump has a strong base of support in Pennsylvania outside the urban centers of Pittsburgh and Philly. And what about the comments the president has made about challenging mail-in ballots in Pennsylvania, Jason? The Supreme Court has let a ruling stand that ballots that come into Pennsylvania up to 3 days after tonight will legally be counted. But we certainly can expect this White House to try to challenge that.
I think it's dangerous for the country for that type of rhetoric to exist that challenges the validity of legitimately cast votes under the laws of that state. That in itself is a problem. But if we have, of course, there's a lot of emotion, deservedly so, on both sides, and if we have an election that is not known and the outcome does come down to Pennsylvania, and the president casts an air of illegitimacy across these votes that come in late, it's the worst possible ending to this type of election. You know, we've been so polarized for so long, and to have it come down to a situation like that, it would be really unfortunate.
We're speaking with former Congressman and author Jason Altmaier on this historic election day. Let us know if you voted, if you plan to vote today, and what your thoughts are about this historic day. 549-2937. Mary along Edgewood Avenue. Mary, good morning. Mary,
turn
your radio down and go ahead.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
I really would like to see Biden win. Trump, no. Absolutely not.
And why is that?
Because he is lies, and he's
You still there, Mary?
I'm here.
Yeah, finish your thought.
Well, I don't think Trump is the man for the job.
Okay. That's Mary in Riverside, Avondale, I think, is where she's calling from. Jason, when you look at nonpartisan predictions for how tonight is going to shake out, particularly the Cook Political Report, which I think is a pretty good arbiter, the 538 forecast, the Economist forecast, they predict that Joe Biden could walk away from as little as 290 to 350 electoral votes. They predict a narrow to a large electoral college win for Joe Biden and a decisive popular vote win. They also believe that your former body, the U.S. House of Representatives, is going to pick up a number of Democratic seats and that chances are quite good that the Democrats will flip control of the Senate from red to blue. If these predictions bear out, we're going to see a Democratic sweep tonight. That said, they are just predictions. But if they do, if we do see a landslide or a sweep like that tonight, how much do you think that this antipathy toward the way the Trump administration has conducted itself could be the reason? Because we have heard quite a bit from Republicans around the area who voted Republican all their lives and are splitting tickets today. They're going to vote down ballot for Republicans, but they're going to send a message that they don't approve of this president and cast the lever for Joe Biden. How much of a factor do you think this will be?
I think that is an enormous factor. If you look at 2016, that election came down to those three Midwestern states that you mentioned, in a cumulative total of 77,000 votes. And if nothing had changed, if the president had conducted himself in a presidential manner and everything was fine and COVID never happened, it still would have been very unlikely that the president would have been able to draw that inside straight for the second hand in a row. You add on top of that all of the things that have happened over the past 4 years, and as angry as people on the Democratic side are, what's going to come down to the determining the outcome is the Republicans who supported President Trump last time and aren't going to support him this time, because I don't think you're going to have very many, if any at all, that go the other way, that opposed President Trump last time and look at his presidency and say, oh yeah, I like what he's done. I think I'm going to switch this time. Very few votes are going to go that way. So when you look at very close margins in many of the big swing states, that literally might determine the next president. Is Republican voters who are just unhappy with the way the president has conducted himself, they're going to vote Democrat, and that could determine the outcome.
You know, we have listeners up in South Georgia listening this morning, Camden and Glynn counties. Let's take a moment to talk about Georgia, which is a swing state this cycle, which has astounded longtime political observers. There are even some predictions that Georgia could go blue tonight, although not everyone is on that page. What are your thoughts about Georgia?
It's a legitimate toss-up state on the presidential race. It could definitely go towards Vice President Biden. That's going to take a while to find out. I think it's going to be very close. But what's most interesting for our listeners in Georgia is the real issue here. I think most people believe that Vice President Biden is going to win probably by a comfortable margin. They are going to pick up seats in the House on the Democratic side. The Senate is what really matters tonight when you're watching these races. And in Georgia, they have two Senate races on the ballot because one of them is a special election, the only state in the country. Mm-hmm. So when you look at what could possibly happen because of the runoff possibility that they have in the Georgia system, it's not impossible that the Senate could be a exact tie, a 49 to 49 tie, or 50 to 50 tie with the new vice president breaking the tie, with two seats in play in Georgia after the election. So you would have the same scenario that I just described in Pennsylvania, where both candidates would go into Georgia and campaign because the entire balance of power in the Senate could rest on those two Senate races in Georgia. And they're both very close. It really could come down to that.
So we'll keep our eyes on that. In the meantime, lots of calls for former congressman, author, and Ponte Vedra healthcare executive Jason Altmaier on this election day. Chris is in St. Augustine. Hey, Chris, good morning. Go ahead.
Good morning. The whole electoral college system is a little just beyond comprehension. If you were to tell me today that I can't pick the mayor of St. Augustine because the city councilmen are going to pick him for me, I would say that's an outrage. But why is it okay at the presidential level?
Chris, thanks. You know, Jason, there have only been a few mismatches in American history between the popular vote and the electoral college. And so it's only been really recently that people have started to get exercised about the electoral college. And there are calls on the left to get rid of it. That would be very difficult to do. Can you share a little bit of your thoughts about the electoral college?
The Electoral College, of course, is a constitutional issue, so to get rid of it, you would need a constitutional amendment, which would be extremely difficult because you would need three-quarters of the states, and the states that benefit from the Electoral College, of course, are the more rural states in the middle of the country. Yes, they traditionally go Republican, and that's why the last couple of times in our lifetime when this has happened, it's been the Democrat that's won the popular vote but lost in the Electoral College. And those states in the middle of the country who are determinative of those elections are not going to vote to take away their own power. So doing away with the Electoral College is extremely unlikely. Another issue having related to that is the Senate. And of course, in the Senate, every state has two senators. So California has the same number as Idaho, and Florida has the same number as Delaware. And you're seeing the population shift in the country to the coasts, and it's projected in the year 2040, half of the population of the country will live in eight states. The other half of the population of the country will live in 42 states, which means half the country will have 84 senators. The other half will have 16 senators.
And yeah, is that unsustainable? That is going to become an increasingly tense pain point in our politics, isn't it?
Well, that's why you hear so much about statehood for Washington, D.C. and Puerto Rico, because that is the Democrats' way of expanding the playing field. You know, a couple of what would be states that would certainly elect Democratic senators that would even it out. But the country is going to have to come to grips with that imbalance, and it applies to the Electoral College as well, that the very rural, less popular states have greatly disproportionate power in the electoral system.
Bill is in Mandarin. Go ahead, Bill. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, just a couple of points. I've been voting since 1968, and that was the raucous year, as you recall. And I must say I've never felt more embarrassed for America in terms of what's going on here swirling around this election today. Challenges, gunmen in the street, how embarrassing. Another point that I'd like to make on this Electoral College, it does update it every 10 years, so I think about, say, in a few more decades, those populous states on the coastal lines will indeed come to have sway over the Electoral College. One final point, if Biden wins, it's 55-45. If Trump wins, it'll be 51-49. Thanks very much.
All right, Bill, thanks for those predictions. Bonnie at the beaches. Hi, Bonnie.
Hi, Melissa. Thanks for taking the call. I think you somewhat addressed the question I had. Given the Lincoln Project and just the number of people I know who are Republican who have said that they are voting for Biden-Harris this year, it's really encouraging. However, as a Democrat, I can tell you my stomach's in knots right now over this election, and I'll be on the edge of my seat until it's finally over. But I'm wondering if there has actually been any deep analysis done to say what percentage point of Republicans might need to be swayed to vote for Biden-Harris in order to really take this thing over the top tonight. Thank you.
Bonnie, thanks. You know, Jason, the thing that's really stuck out to me as remarkable this election is the so-called never Trumper Republicans that have organized to defeat President Trump. Groups like the Lincoln Project and Republican Voters Against Trump, and they've stated that their goal is to peel off a small but decisive slice of Republican voters enough to defeat this president and make him a one-term president. They say they've done it because they feel he is unfit and a threat to our Constitution and our rule of law in America. You know, according to the polling that has been published on this, there are Republicans splitting tickets and voting for the Biden-Harris ticket, along with, particularly here in Florida, a slight majority of independent voters who could really make the difference in Florida. But what are your thoughts about what we've seen this time around, the so-called Biden Republicans that are just for this one election only going to vote for the Democrat, they say?
It may not be just for this election only. These are more than likely people who are thoughtful and vote for the person rather than the party in most cases, and maybe feel uncomfortable with the vote they cast for President Trump last time. But it's very possible that the popular vote margin is going to be historically large. Herbert Hoover lost by 17 points running for re-election. Since that time, the largest repudiation of a sitting president has been 9 points, and that was Jimmy Carter. And I think it's very possible that, President Trump's vote against could go higher than that. This could be the largest margin of vote against an incumbent president since Herbert Hoover.
You think that it could be a 10-point election, really?
I do. If you look at the national race, the Electoral College, you're going to have many states that are toss-ups, and it could be anywhere between a very close margin for President Trump on up to 320, 340 electoral votes for Vice President Biden. And, of course, that's what matters. But I do think across the country, you do have the possibility of having it be a margin that exceeded even Jimmy Carter's loss.
Mark in Murray Hill. Hi, Mark. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that this president and his basket of deplorables, not my words, have encouraged violence against people at campaign rallies. We've seen, everyone remembers the guy get punched out at the encouragement of Donald Trump early. This was in the previous time. We saw everyone has seen the video of the cars trying to run the bus off the road in Texas. I just want to say, if you're a Democratic voter, do not be afraid of these people. We can buy trucks too, and we can buy guns too. And whatever you do today or tomorrow or the next day, we will meet, we will match. So you want violence, bring it on. Just because a car has a Biden bumper sticker on the back of it doesn't mean there's not a 38 in the glove box.
Okay, Mark, we don't want to encourage violence. Please, everyone, please, let's remain calm. Jason tweets the show, in Nassau County, I've never seen support for a Democrat like we're seeing here. Biden yard signs are everywhere on Amelia Island. When's the last time Nassau voted in a Democrat? It's been a minute. We will see tonight, he says. Let's go to Ed in Fleming Island. Hi, Ed. Good morning.
Good morning. Yes, I just want to mention something here that I think is valid. The actual fact, I think, based on the history, is that the best thing that can happen to the left wing, the progressive wing, or the Democratic Party, is for Trump to win. And let me tell you why. Number one will be his last term, his lame duck. Also, in history, it's very rare for a political party, regardless of who it is, to win 3 terms in a row. Right now, we would have to go back to Ronald Reagan and George Bush, the father, was all the way back there to find one. Before that, you have to go all the way back to FDR and Truman. Extremely rare, almost guaranteed that the opposite party will be the winner on the third term. Also, remember, Biden ran for office specifically, and he admitted to stop the left wing of the party, the more leftist, like Sanders and the AOC.
Thanks,
he
Ed.
He represents
yeah.
the Democratic establishment. Thank you.
Thank you, Ed. Okay, so good insights from Ed in Fleming Island and other listeners from across the area. With all of this said, Jason Altmaier, we have until 7 o'clock tonight for anyone who has not yet cast a ballot to get out there and vote. You know, Jason, it's just amazing to me that 100 million Americans have already voted, with 50 or 60 million more expected to turn out today.
That's the most encouraging. Every election, every 4 years, you hear this election is the most important election in the history of the country. And, you know, of course, we're saying it again this year because of the polarization between the two candidates. But there's no question that in our lifetime, this election, there's more enthusiasm and there's more talk about it and there's more people paying attention than has happened at any point in our lifetime. So I'm encouraged by that. The fact that you said at the top of the news here on the show, record turnout for young people who famously never show up to vote for anything, record turnout across every demographic. It's amazing the enthusiasm that exists on both sides. And regardless of the outcome, I think that is a positive sign for the country.
It really is. And it's exciting to see. And I want to thank you so much, Jason. So good to have your insights as a former member of Congress and a spokesperson and a pundit on politics. Jason Altmaier with us, healthcare executive and author of Dead Center, former congressman from Pittsburgh. Jason, thanks. And we'll see you on the other side.
Thank you, Melissa. Glad to be here.
Much more still ahead, meanwhile, later in the hour.
It's everywhere. It's ubiquitous, this sense of stress. So for people who are listening that feel like, well, like maybe they're the only one, yeah, they're not.
How to manage that election stress and agita you might be feeling. That and more still ahead on this election day. We'll be right back.
Arbus Magazine, focusing on the arts, business, and culture that enhance the quality of life in our community. 27th Annual Fall Art and Cultural Issue features history, art, and culture in the outdoors. Arbus Magazine, in-depth, in-touch. Arbus.com.
You blink, you reach for that handful of chips, you scroll through social media, it's all happening on automatic pilot. When it comes to being well-informed, being more mindful of where you get your news can make a big difference in how you see the world. To get your information in context, to gain different perspectives, and to understand real issues, choose NPR as your go-to source for election news. 2020 election, it's time to listen.
Here on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. A center in Yulee is the only organization of its kind anywhere in Florida to be chosen for a national program aiming to heal up some of this nation's wounds. Starting Point Behavioral Health in Nassau County is participating in specialized training to help provide behavioral health care to patients who have experienced the kind of trauma that goes along with systemic racism in this country. Lori Pagel, PhD, is the CEO of Starting Point, and I spoke with her. Let's listen. Dr. Laureen Pagel, good to talk to you. Thanks for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me today.
It's exciting to hear that Starting Point Behavioral Health Care up in Yulee is the only provider in Florida chosen for this exciting project. This is trauma-informed, resilience-oriented, equity call-to-action community of practice. That's a fancy way of saying you're going to be treating people affected by trauma and also systemic racism. Tell us about this project.
Well, we are very, very excited about this, Melissa. And again, as you said, we're the only organization in Florida to be chosen. There are 19 others across the country. And this is being supported by the National Council for Community Behavioral Health. And they are leading experts in training others in trauma and resilience and responding to that. What we are seeing in our country currently with the systemic racism and the racial injustice and the tensions impacted, again, also by COVID-19 and the stress and the anxiety. These are all causing what we call trauma responses in individuals. And that's not just the individuals we treat who walk in the door for help. It's greatly impacting our own staff and how they're responding. And as mental health professionals, we have to learn how to recognize that within ourselves and making sure we are taking care of ourselves in order for us to be able to take care of and treat appropriately the people who walk in the door who are seeking our services. So we're seeing trauma across the country, and the response to that is, again, increased anxiety, depression, suicidal thoughts and ideations and attempts, people's inability to focus, to problem solve, to manage conflict. Sometimes people are just shutting down, or they're drinking to excess to cope. So we want to address all of those issues.
People are suffering, and this is a unique model and a cutting-edge model that you'll be employing. Can you tell us a little bit more about why it's different?
It's different because it really works on creating the foundation from the ground up within the organization and looking at every aspect of what we are doing. It will entail a cultural assessment of the organization so we can get a baseline of our staff, how they feel about what's going on, how it's impacting them, and if they're not even comfortable about talking about some of these issues, how can we possibly expect the people that we're serving to talk about it? It spans over 12 months, again, with national experts and coaching calls every month to lead us along the way and helping us to develop a strategy that will have long-term impact and not something that's going to be one and done, but a sustainable future for trauma-informed care for the organization.
And also what caught our eye about this is that you're looking at the effects of not just trauma, but also inequity and systemic racism over multiple generations. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Correct. This is something I've recently learned about myself. I have to admit, not really understanding that, but in speaking with my staff who are persons of color and explaining to me how that has impacted them over the many, many years. So although maybe as an individual, they have not experienced some of the racism, those stories are passed on from generation to generation. And when they hear those stories and they see the impact and they know what's happened with their grandparents and the great-grandparents and even their parents, and again, their stories are told over and over again, it impacts them every day and they see that. And then it's also the future going forward. We have seen recently, even looking at Ahmaud Arbery, who's close by in Georgia. I have staff members who live in that neighborhood, mm-hmm. up in Brunswick. And when George Floyd was killed, they had a visceral reaction to that, of the trauma, because of everything that they had was part of their growing up and the learning and how this impacted their family for generations. And it created this reaction for them. And my staff were saying to me, I'm not okay. This is greatly impacting me right now of what's happening and what's been happening for years and years and years.
Yeah. And for white people in this country, they hear about this, they see the Black Lives Matter movement, but they just don't have the same experience. So
I have not had those experiences myself.
Right. So this is a completely different way of looking at the effects of racism on people's mental and emotional health.
That is exactly correct, Melissa. And I see trauma and I see racism and I see Black Lives Matter as a mental health issue. It impacts our brain. When people are experiencing crisis and trauma, they go into what you call the survival brain. That survival mode. And when we're in that brain, again, it's harder for people to problem solve and to think and to manage what's going on for them. And I, as an individual, have not really experienced that, but I'm seeing that in my coworkers. We're seeing that impact, and it is truly a mental health issue. Depression and anxiety are on the rise in this country, as is substance use.
Yeah, and so why was your organization, Starting Point, the only one in Florida that was chosen to do this kind of leading edge work?
We applied as a competitive grant application, and we applied, and honestly, I do not know how many others applied. But we have a history within our organization of having completed other types of projects, organizational change projects, starting back in 2008 with how we deliver services. With our open access model. So we have experience and we have the leadership backing these transformational change products. And so I believe the National Council saw that as even a small organization, that we had the support and the experience to ensure that it was going to be money well invested.
So then how does it go from here? What are the next steps?
So we're excited to say that today is actually our first national call with the other organizations, and tomorrow's our coaching call. So we kick it off officially today for our 12-month journey. And also tomorrow, we are having a big all-staff celebration of this event, because I do believe it is transformational. And we are celebrating our journey together and talking about what we're going to look forward to over the next 12 months and start the really hard work of what it takes to make those changes.
You'll have to check back with us next year. Thanks so much for sharing this news with us.
Well, thank you for having me on today, Melissa. I greatly appreciate that.
She's Dr. Laureen Pagel, CEO of Starting Point Behavioral Healthcare in Yulee, one of only 20 selected nationally for a national project on trauma, racism, and resilience-oriented care. Well, this month you can prepare for the holiday season by shopping with a purpose and at a distance if you need to at the local nonprofit that's setting a national model. Kristen Keene is the founder and CEO of ReThreaded. She's on the line. Hey, Kristen, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
It's so good to have you on the show. I'm such a big fan of what you've accomplished with ReThreaded as you help women who've been exploited and sexually trafficked find employment, find a new life. And you make these incredible products at ReThreaded where you take old things and literally sew a new story, as you say, and make them into beautiful new things. So, you know, in this time of COVID, it's been tough for retailers, but you've gotten creative and you're doing some cool things as we head into the so-called festive period of the holidays. What do you got cooking?
Well, this is our creative pivot. So we do about 70% of our sales are events, which is now gone. So what we'd like to do is engage businesses, because now everyone's virtual. So we'd like to create an opportunity for business owners or organizations, it doesn't matter, to rally their troops during the holidays to help ReThreaded. So what we've done is create, we're going to have a shopping week, and each business or organization gets a code, and this code gives you a discount to ReThreaded for 1 week. And what we do is we track the discount, and we're able then to give the business a total of how of the shopping amount that their organization did, and then we're able to measure the impact. Like, this provided 100 hours of freedom. This provided 100 hours of mental health training. So we're able to give the company a specific amount of what their employees and their customers did. So it's an awesome way to kind of make a difference in the world while doing your holiday shopping and rallying your troops. So, yeah, we're super excited about it.
Wow. So you're talking specifically right now then to the leaders of companies. This is a way that they can get their workforce engaged in holiday shopping and social responsibility at the same time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a great way to engage, because right now everyone's virtual. So this is a way to connect. Also connect your people during this time as well. So we have, like, for example, Community First has joined us, and they're going to be giving this to all their employees and using this to rally all of their employees during this time. So, yeah.
So people need to just go to ReThreaded.com, particularly if you're in a position to send this out to your workforce, this special discount at ReThreaded, and they can pick the week that they decide to do the action too. Is that right?
Yeah, well, we're now going to do it the first week of December.
Okay.
Which is one of the largest shopping weeks in the country. And also, we provide everything you need. We provide the graphics. If you need social media posts, we provide social media posts. So we try to make it as easy as possible for you to do this as well.
And, you know, tell, for people that aren't familiar with you, you've been on this show quite a bit, but I want to make sure people fully understand ReThreaded's story. Can you talk a little bit about what inspired you to found the company and the kinds of products you're creating?
So what I believe is that we all have potential that's tapped inside us. We just need the right environment. So we work with women who have come out of human trafficking, severe complex trauma, and we put them in an environment where they can be who they're created to be. So we try to reflect that in our product. Like, we make beautiful upcycled pieces made from leather, made from Southwest Airlines leather airline seats. We make them into beautiful journals. We have a new leather dop kit. We have a brand new bag we're debuting on November 15th. So we try to make it reflective of what our mission is.
And I personally love the Grace scarf, which is one of your most popular products. I own one, and so do several women Woo-hoo! That I know. I have a pair of rethreaded earrings that are made with leather and metal. The leather came from Southwest Airlines airplane seats that you yeah. were able to get your hands on and repurpose. And so those are just, you know, that's one example of the kind of cool stuff that you do at Rethreaded. Do you have any new stuff, any new products that you're debuting for this holiday?
Yes, we have a brand new leather dop kit, which is like a travel kit. It looks like a men's shave kit, so that is beautiful. We have a new padfolio, so it's you can bring it to all your business meetings. And this Sunday, November 15th, we're debuting a brand new, our first big leather duffel bag that we make. It is the most beautiful, complex thing we've ever made. It's gorgeous. And this week we're debuting our new ornament. So every year we debut a new ornament series. So in 1 week we're going live with our new ornament.
Very nice. And we're speaking with Kristen Keene, CEO of Rethreaded, about their Shop with a Purpose Engagement Week. The first week in December, they're creating an online partnership with local businesses, giving all of your employees at your business a chance to change lives for survivors of human trafficking right from their computer. They will create a special code just for your company, and you will get a special 15% discount at Rethreaded, and you can buy their products that really are some of the most special products from any locally owned business anywhere in this region. They'll measure the total for your company to show your company the impact that you've made on local women and local employment. So if you're a CEO or an HR manager or anyone like that in a position to implement an initiative like this for the holidays at your firm, just go to rethreaded.com, check it out, make it happen, and get to shopping. I can't believe it's that time of year already, Kristen. It's time to start shopping for the holidays.
It came way too quick. I know.
Again, that's rethreaded.com. She is founder and CEO Kristen Keene, doing amazing work in this community. Kristen, thanks so much.
Thanks, Melissa.
And in a moment, have you been stressed out over this election? Yoga and meditation expert Dan Nevins, our occasional contributor, has some tips to chill you out. We'll be right back.
American voters will finally get to choose who they want in the White House.
I'm running as a proud Democrat, but I will govern as an American president.
Get out and vote. The red wave is coming.
And an anxious nation awaits the results of critical contests around the country. Join us tonight for special live coverage of Election Night 2020, plus more updates on tomorrow's morning edition from NPR News.
Tonight at 8 on WJCT News 89.9.
Milan, Italy is a big high fashion hub, but a lot of the businesses that support the industry, they're pretty small.
We produce something for our clients. We are not direct sellers, and so we have to follow our clients and see what they do.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, waiting, seeing, and weathering this pandemic in the Italian embroidery business. Next time on Marketplace.
Tonight at 6 on WJCT News 89.9.
On the next Fresh Air, Gerald Walker, the author of Street Shadows, a memoir of race, rebellion, and redemption, and the memoir The World in Flames, a black boyhood in a white supremacist doomsday cult. His new book is a collection of personal essays called How to Make a Slave. Join us.
Today at noon on WJCT News 89.9.
Record numbers have voted early, and millions more will make their voices heard on Election Day. As the polls open nationwide for in-person voting, we're turning the conversation over to you. I'm Jen White. Perhaps you've got a sticker, or you're standing in line, or you're just waiting for the counting to begin. We'll share your Election Day stories next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, if the election, the pandemic, the recession, this time that we're living in has got you on edge, trust that you are not alone. There are ways to manage this anxiety. I learned more from local veteran and internationally renowned yoga and meditation leader, Dan Nevins. Take a listen. Dan Nevins, good to hear your voice once again. Thanks for being with us.
I'm so happy to be here once again, Melissa.
And we are happy to hear your calming voice in these tense times as we talk about how to keep our cool on this incredibly divisive and historic Election Day. I know you've been hearing from a lot of folks about this. People are anxious, whatever side of the political aisle they fall on, about how this is going to go. So what's your advice for everyone?
You know, and you're right. It's everywhere. It's ubiquitous, this sense of stress. So for people who are listening that feel like, well, like maybe they're the only one, yeah, they're not. And so this is what I do. So you know, as a yoga teacher and meditation teacher, there's a bunch of things I realized. And when it comes down to the stress response in your body, because it's really chemistry, biology that's happening, right? Stress evokes a response, and that makes us feel a certain way, and it's a way that we don't like to feel. It really comes down to some personal accountability steps that we can do to manage that stress. For one, and I've said this before, that it's one of the key things to do is to focus on the things that you're grateful for. As cliche as that sounds, it's impossible to be grateful for something and have anxiety at the same time. So when you fill your space with the things that are going well, the things that are happening in your life that are working, like that is step number one. Number two, so there's a saying in Baptiste Yoga that we say it's to be a yes for something, and that means put your attention on what you want to have happen and be for it. So in this process, there's probably a lot of shoulds and shouldn'ts that people have kind of going through their head. But I'd say, like, maybe take your focus off of, you have your individual vote and you have your community and your sphere of influence, but then put your attention on what you want to have happen in your life, your circle, your family, your community, and just be for that. Not to dismiss the election and the impact of it, but those are just things you can do to really focus. And when the situation is overwhelming, just remember this one thing is the most important thing, the thing that we do have control over, because we obviously don't have control over the results of the election or any issues that come up of accountability or counting or any of those things, is our reaction to the stressors in our life. Viktor Frankl, who's a noted psychologist, neurologist, Holocaust survivor, there's a quote that he has that I really love, and he says that between stimulus and response, there's a space. And that space is our power to choose our response. And in our response lies our growth and freedom. And it's really easy to say, and it's different when it's happening, when the stress response is on you. And this is the sort of way out for that. Our breath is our most powerful tool. When fight or flight kicks in, when that sort of start, you notice the stress response has got you. You're feeling anxious, your chest is tight, your breathing is shallow. We can just override our inherent response, that fight or flight sort of stress response, and take full, complete breaths. And when you do that, it actually shuts. When you override your body's stress response, it turns it off. The amygdala stops producing cortisol. All the things in your brain chemistry start to level out when we just take control of our breath. And then when we have that moment of like, okay, I've got my breath, then we can choose, okay, is this really worth me being all worked up and having an impact on my social life, my family life, my general sense of well-being when it's really out of my control? And then put your attention again on what you want to have happen, what is in our control. If we can do those things, just remember that our response is something that we have control over, and that the key to getting access to the ability to respond is first by just bringing full, complete breath back into our body.
Well, there's a reason you're so renowned for what you do. I think everyone feels so much calmer already having listened to you just now. So that's wonderful. I hope everyone keeps these precepts in mind on Election Day. And I want to thank you, Dan, as always, for lending your insights to this show. What a great resource you are for this community. Yoga and meditation teacher and veteran Dan Nevins, Veterans Day coming up on the 11th. So we'll be observing that, too. Dan, thanks again.
Of course. Thanks, Melissa. Always a pleasure to be with you.
Deep breaths, everyone, and be sure to join WJCT tonight starting at 7 p.m. for full local and national election results. We'll be live here on the radio. Also, catch our video stream on WJCT's Facebook page, plus updates on WJCT television. Stick with us tonight. And get out and vote, everybody, if you haven't already. That's our show. Thanks for listening. Thanks to all of our guests and callers, along with Heather Schatz, Josh Torres, Jessica Palumbo, Bill Bortsfield, Catherine Hobbs, and our whole team. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect. We'll be back on the air at 7 o'clock tonight, everyone, and catch you then. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.